Welcome to the new year. On the podcast today, we have the man who is the personification of the lake that sank the Edmund Fitzgerald, Andrew Clark.
Superior
lives on from the Chippewa on down.
Yeah.
The big lake they call Gitche-Gumee.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's Superior. God damn, yeah. You heathen.
No, what? I knew that. I knew every detail about the Edmund Fitzgerald wreck at one point, but
it's like apparently not. My God.
No, I just a lot of that just escaped my mind as soon as Lucas said the words. Edmund Fitzgerald. It fucking sucks. It's sad. The crazy thing, I mean, it's all crazy, but the thing that always kind of like freaks me out about the Edmund Fitzgerald is that it's not like thousands of feet down. It probably sank because a wave basically like took the bow of the ship and turned it at a 90 degree angle so it was facing downwards, and the bow of the ship hit the bottom of the lake.
Oh.
Because the ship is fucking huge, and then like snapped it in half and then it sunk. It didn't like, there wasn't like a hole in it and then it sunk to the bottom of the lake. It was in, you know, relatively shallow water for a ship that size, and the waves were so powerful that it basically flipped the ship end over end and snapped it in half.
It was likely a rogue wave too, which at that point, rogue waves were kind of thought to be like tails, like especially on a lake. Like,
scientists didn't believe in them, and sailors would keep saying like, no, sometimes waves just come out of nowhere that are 300
gigantic.
Feet high and they will kill everything in their path.
Yeah.
The ship that was on the same route as the Edmund Fitzgerald, that was ahead of it by like a quarter mile, reported like it like kind of got stuck in the swell of a wave that was forming and like went completely under and then like popped back up.
Oh.
And then like 30 seconds later, the Edmund Fitzgerald disappeared from its radar.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, that was the one that got him. It had to have been. And by the time it reached them, it would have been like fucking massive.
Yeah. No, it was like 1995 was when we proved definitively that rogue waves were 100% a real thing. And until then, yeah, scientists were just like, ah, the sailors, they're so stupid. They think waves get bigger. Like, nah, not that much bigger. That's not how it works. It's science.
Yeah.
And then they're like, nope, sometimes it just happens.
Is
and
that
we don't know
of
why.
Seismic activity? Oh, we're still
that's
not
what
sure
they,
why. Okay.
Well, that's what they would say. Yeah, it's like tsunamis and shit, sure. Like, that's clear, defined purpose. But like in a normal like circumstance, it doesn't make any sense. There's no way that a wave would just randomly be way bigger than the other waves. And so it's like, but they are.
Yeah. And that,
I don't know what to tell you, man.
We'll leave it up to you to figure out why this thing happens. But yeah, you could say it's weird that charged particles would fire down from clouds and strike the earth, leaving fire in its wake. That doesn't make any sense. Well, it fucking happens. So you figure it out. It's not our job. Like, I remember watching the Discovery Channel. At this point, I would have been pretty young. Because it was like at the beginning of when people were accepting that rogue waves were a thing, and like they had sailors talking about it, and there were still like fucking scientists that were like, you know, rogue waves never really been proven, you know, a lot of firsthand accounts, but you know, I've never seen the proof. And
right.
It's got to be real. Like, it's not Bigfoot. We have proof of this happening.
It was 2019 that scientists did a contained, like, wind tunnel-esque experiment where they recreated they call it the Droppner wave, the 1995 definitive proof that rogue waves exist. And yeah, they're like, they think that it's just, like, crossing seas, colliding together and, like, shooting the water up, like, two or three times higher than it should be. And then that wave carrying a little, but... Yeah, no, it makes no sense.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Also on the podcast today, we have a man who's about to make his argument for why he should replace Mike McCarthy as the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Ryan Holtz.
Oh, man, I'm really good at Madden and NCAA football. So it's the same thing, right?
No.
There's no politics. There's no managing egos. There's no
like the owner's a really nice guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Jerry Jones, very understanding and collaborative owner.
Actually, that's maybe a more interesting question. What NFL team would you guys least want to coach? What seems like the most toxic environment?
I mean, it'd be a bad team, so it wouldn't be the Cowboys. Like, the Panthers are definitely up there because their owner's a dickwad, too, and they're really bad.
Yeah, like maybe a couple of years ago would have been the Commanders.
Yeah, with Dan Snyder, that would have been rough.
I think the Bears would be the most frustrating just because that's the most insular and incompetent, it seems to me.
I think that you got a pretty good argument there just with the history, like the last, you know, couple decades of how bad things have gone. And I mean, the players, you know, don't seem to have a lot of football maturity to them the way that, even like, especially when they've lost to the Packers this last season, they will publicly go out and like just talk massive shit about, fuck you guys, didn't want to win anyway. You guys suck ass. Like, even though you beat us, like, you have no one good on your team. Go fuck yourself. We hate the fans. The city of Green Bay sucks. Like, they just don't seem to really have a good handle on how to lose and get better from it. They kind of just get really mad and don't get better.
Didn't the Cardinals have the worst player report card from last season?
The Cardinals hate playing for the Cardinals. It's their facility, I think, their facility report card.
Right.
A couple of years ago, this has been a crazy turnaround, but like, remember how toxic the Texans were for a little bit with like Nick Caserio? Right. And then obviously all the Deshaun Watson shit that was going on when he was still there before they finally traded him. It was a bad place to be.
Actually, with my politics, that might be the worst, just because the owner, whose name escapes me, is still super weird and Jesus-y, and I think he has a mega church pastor on like the advisory board.
They're all, I mean, you're talking about billionaires,
right?
They're all freaks, dude.
Yeah, they're not beyond the just garbage like, tier.
Coaching for the Packers probably gives you, you know, that's got to be a desirable job just because you don't have that owner bearing down on you that can do anything that they want. I mean, there's a president who has authority, but it is kind of like a triumvirate in the Packers with the president, the general manager, and the coach with like level. There's levels of authority, but they all do have authority.
I get that, but also I feel like that emboldens Packers fans to be even more critical and voice their opinions even more strongly than the average football fan. I don't know. I think the line would get to me of like, well, as a stockholder, I'm technically an owner, and this is what I think you should do with the team, and then just voice the worst sports talks radio opinion.
Fans of every team do that, though. The only difference is that they don't say, I'm technically an owner, before saying exactly what the Packers fan would have said.
Yeah, no, the technically an owner thing is a joke. Like, the stock is not real. It's literally a donation. It has no value whatsoever. Like, it's a fancy donation. That's all it is. You've donated money to the organization.
You get a plaque in return for donating.
I have it. We haven't hung it up yet in our new apartment, and like, it literally says on there, this has no value and cannot be traded. Like, it is just a plaque. So I'd just be like, thanks for the money. I mean, we're going to keep trying to win, but
mine and my brother's is up in my parents' basement right now.
Damn. You didn't take that?
I forget if that was like I was just born gift or like a first communion gift, but yeah.
That'd be really funny for a first communion gift. You'll get to go to heaven now. Here's a piece of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I think mine was just born because it's got my dad's name on it too. So I think it's I bought it for a baby.
Aww.
Yeah. Baby franchise owner of an NFL team.
Future business owner, Ryan Holtz.
Oh my God. You're talking to a future U.S. Army soldier.
Jesus Christ. Wow, flashing back to a couple people from high school with that line. Also, hello, I am Lucas DeRuyter, and I'm still riding the high of that handed and unexpected victory the Green Bay Packers had over the Texas Cowboys, over the Cowboys yesterday.
The Texas Cowboys.
Texas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Dallas Cowboys. Why did I forget that? I don't know. We beat them by more than we beat the Chicago Bears in that non-playoff game, in that game we had to win. That's weird, right?
I mean, and the game wasn't even as close as a score ended up being.
Yeah.
Because basically for the last quarter of the game, we kind of just let them do whatever they wanted and tried to keep them in bounds and drain clock. We did a bad job of it. We kind of almost let them back in the game, which was not good. But that game was really, you know, 48-16 or 15 or whatever it actually was.
The level of copium you have to consume as a Cowboys fan with a straight face to say, oh, well, we only lost by two scores is like, buddy, you better get some Nican because that will kill you, that amount of copium.
Yeah, that game was over, you know, a couple minutes into the second quarter.
The pick six probably ended the game. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everything from that was more or less garbage. And then, yeah, definitely 48-16 was fully game over.
Yep.
And it was a joke. And then Matt LaFleur said, like, he regretted taking out the starters.
Yeah.
So, because I didn't realize he took out defensive starters, too.
Yeah.
And that was part of why they were marching so quickly. So, yeah.
That was fine.
No, that's fine. I think he wanted the score to be 48-16. I think he did not want it to look a little bit close.
Yeah, he didn't want it to look like it was a competitive game for any amount of time. Which, if you just look at the box score, like maybe you think it was a competitive game until the third quarter and then we ran away with it. That's not what happened.
No. Anyone qualified to speak on football? It. Yeah, that. And now we go up against the 49ers, which is going to be
Santa
weird.
Clara.
Is this still our ceiling without Aaron Rodgers? Probably, but also a heck of a lot further than I ever thought we'd get this season already.
Yeah, that's the thing about football, though, is there's no such thing as a ceiling. Like, you could just get really fucking lucky. Like, we could knock Brock Purdy out of the game the first play of the game.
Yep.
And suddenly
Brock Purdy could fuck up, you know, like,
of course
he's had a couple of games this season where he's not played well. I mean, that's not the expectation. The expectation is that they're going to work, you know, in sync like they usually do in lockstep and systematically dismantle our defense.
There's just no such thing as a sure thing in football.
Yeah.
Like if it was a 7-game series, then yeah, we'd be pretty much all but eliminated. But no, in one fucking game, I think the worst odds we'd get is like 20-25%. Like, and that's ridiculous odds to make the NFC Championship game. If you would have told anyone before the season started that the Packers would have a 25% shot to make the NFC Championship game, they'd spit in your face. Like,
and yeah. Sure, we could get embarrassed next weekend. But
there's no such thing as getting embarrassed.
Yeah, I don't care.
Anymore.
We won a playoff game.
Yeah.
It's
I thought
we'd
get embarrassed yesterday, but here we are.
We're the 7th seed. We're the first 7th seed to win a playoff game. If we lose really badly to the 49ers, probably the best team in football, you know, with like the team that we have right now, fucking okay.
Yeah.
No one's going to say like, oh, the Packers fell apart. Jordan Love really couldn't get it done. They were not supposed to be here.
Yeah. It's house money. No, the second that we didn't get embarrassed against the Cowboys, it was house money. I didn't.
Yep.
When we went up 20-0, that's what I was saying. I was like, we did it. I don't care if they come back and win this game. We did not get embarrassed on national TV. Like, we put up a fight. It's over. It's just gravy from here on out, baby. We're in the black, as far as I'm concerned. Literally, it could be the worst. It could be a Miami Dolphins, Denver Broncos level beatdown, 70-10.
Who cares?
And I'd still be like, great, fun. We had a great year, had some great wins. Everyone got to see us perform well on the national stage. Like, don't matter, baby.
I Hey, man, I'm just happy to be at this party. I don't care if I get lucky. I don't care if this is the worst party ever. I'm here. I'm in the door. This is wild. Who'd have thought? Not me.
There was a Niners fan on the subreddit after the Lions won, and he was just like, I really, really, really want Tampa to win against the Eagles, because then, like, the four teams left are the Niners, Lions, Packers, and Buccaneers. And, like, if the Niners go to the Super Bowl, great. Niners go to the Super Bowl. If not, depression. But, like, that would be the funniest shit ever, because that means the Packers, Lions, or Buccaneers are going to the Super Bowl. Like, that's insane. Like, what the fuck is happening in the NFL? And I was like, you know what? I agree with a Niners fan for once. I wish the Niners weren't in that list. I wish it was someone else.
If,
but
if your team doesn't win, you always have to root for the most unlikely, dumb, bullshit team. Because, like, nobody likes to see the Chiefs continue to win. Nobody wants dynasties to exist, unless it's your team, obviously. So, yeah. If the Packers lose, I want the fucking Buccaneers to go to the Super Bowl.
Really? No, I'm Lions, baby.
Yeah.
I'm all in on the Lions if the Packers go down.
No, it's tough.
I'm going to be real sad.
I don't know. Like, if the Lions go to the Super Bowl, I'm definitely going to root for them. I don't know about, like, the rest of the playoff. No, wait. Yeah, what am I saying? The Lions have been bad for so long.
They've been,
like,
historic.
Always.
The Buccaneers did just win a Super Bowl. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Really?
The Lions won their first playoff game yesterday.
Yeah,
second.
Like,
first one in 30 years.
Second,
yeah, their other one was like 60 years ago.
it was pre-Super Bowl era. It doesn't even count. In the pre-Super Bowl era, the Lions had championships and shit. No. Lions not a bad team before the Super Bowls existed. Then the Super Bowl came around and they got really bad for 60 years.
What?
So
yeah, okay. I would root for the Lions.
Yeah.
It's weird because I was about to say it's weird because we kind of have a divisional rivalry with the Lions, but do we?
No.
No.
We might start one in the next 2 years. It might become a thing.
Yeah. It's a little weird because there was never like the vitriol between the fans with the Packers and Lions the way there was with the Bears and the Vikings. But the players have talked about, like, you know, even like Aaron Rodgers was talking about this not that long ago, where he's like, yeah, the Bears is not a rivalry anymore. You know, they don't like us, but we don't really care about them. But like the Lions have beat the Packers a lot in the last like decade, like a fair amount. Like they've been very competitive one-on-one with us. Not, you know, in their record as a whole, but like they come to play when they play the Packers.
I feel like it's still just, it's a little brother. The Lions fans hate the Packers. I'm going to throw that one out there.
Maybe it's just us that we don't care about them.
Maybe
every NFC, NFC North fan base hates the Packers. They are all united in not liking the Packers. But yeah, Packers fans, I feel like by and large, are like at least neutral, if not like a little positive towards the
Lions. Fairly ambivalent.
We got to watch Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders. Like, that we've watched two all-time greats every time we would play the Lions. So it was a treat a little bit. It's like, let's watch these dudes do things that no one else has ever done in the history of the sport. Like, that's kind of cool. And then, I don't know, you just don't have the same level of vitriol at the end of the day. So
I honestly, with our record, like in the past 10 years, always being in the mix, maybe even 15 years. Yeah, cool. Hate us a little bit. We deserve it, maybe. And like when you're on top, like that's a part of the fun, being the bad man in the division. Right. Like, yeah.
The Packers embody the evil league of evil. Like we are, like, I remember the Bears are in it and it's like, what the fuck is that? But like, Packers, Patriots, Steelers, like those are bona fide. That is as evil as it fucking gets. They should not be as successful as they have been. It's not fair. And that's good. I like that. That makes it fun. You know that, like, if the Lions win next week, they're not going to want to play the Packers. Like, sure, they don't want to play the Niners, but I think they're going to be a little bummed out that their road either goes through the best team in the NFC or the Packers. Because, I mean, you've been hurt so many times. Like, you definitely don't want to have to do it. But that's their road to the Super Bowl if they manage to pull it off. So we're gonna see.
Gravy. Right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was a lame ass, sleepy guy yesterday. What was it like watching that Lions game with Ian?
It was fun. Yeah. Ian complained about the refs, as he does. But by and large, it was a great game. A lot of back and forth, some big plays on both sides. Amon-Ra St. Brown and Puka Nacua are both like starting to make arguments that they're top five receivers in the NFL, which is insane. So to watch like these two young like studs just go at each other for a while, it was pretty impressive. Yeah. Both teams have just really not great secondaries. So plenty of passing at will, more or less.
Jared that Goff hit on made Tyler Higbee made me like,
oh, that was brutal. That was brutal. What? Jared Goff looked a little stupid sometimes, as he's wont to do. Matt Stafford looked like he was out for the game, and then he just like came back completely unfazed, like he is wont to do.
That replay of him, like his eyes rolling in the back of his head, was scary.
And he got stepped on. Oh, the whole thing. He got beat the fuck up. But, you know, they delivered. Good game. There's a decent amount of Lions fans at Finney's Craft House in Burbank. So if anyone needs to go for a Lions place, it's not the worst. It was like maybe 50-50 with the Rams. I bet you now that the Rams are out of it, it'd be more tilted in the Lions' favor. So, not too shabby.
All right. Well, now that we got the sports talk out of the way, time to overcorrect and talk about the game awards.
Whoa.
One game to another.
Yeah, these happened like a month ago to the day almost. But just scheduling being what it's been. We haven't talked about them yet. So I'm going to burn through the winners quick. Anyone has something to say, we can do so after. Sure, maybe I'm doing a disservice burning through these, but the Game Awards burned through these. So who gives a shit? Not the Game Awards, not Keely. Best Family Game, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, Accessibility, Forza, Esports, Valorant, Content Creator, the VTuber Iron Mouse. That's new. Best Performance, Neil Newbar, Astorian. Best Narrative, Alan Wake 2. Indie Game, Cocoon. Action Game, My Boy, Armored Core 6. Art Direction, Alan Wake 2. Mobile Game, Honkai Star Rail. Still not totally sure what that is. Audio Design, Hi-Fi Rush. Impact, Tachiya. Score and Music, Final Fantasy 16. No fucking clue how that happened. Indie Game, Sea of Stars. Community Support, Baldur's Gate 3. Fighting Game, Street Fighter 6. Most anticipated, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, ongoing, inexplicably, Cyberpunk 2077, adaptation, I mean, they invented this for The Last of Us, so The Last of Us TV series won, action-adventure, Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, RPG, Baldur's Gate 3, Sim Strategy, Pikmin 4, Sports Racing, Forza Motorsport, Multiplayer, Baldur's Gate 3, Player's Voice, Baldur's Gate 3, Direction, Alan Wake 2, GOTY, Baldur's Gate 3.
The hell is Player's Voice?
Like the total audience voting on this one, not like no critics. Choice,
Lucas DeRuyter anime expert votes. This is anyone can vote.
The people's game.
I how far can I carry that anime awards judgeship position? Like, what doors will that open? Can I get a spot on this? Can I represent the anime community in the Game Awards?
Just vote only for anime games.
Do I want to?
Yeah.
But anime isn't game.
Right.
Honkai Star Rail won something, and that's anime.
Well, I picture it like politics. Like, you're in the House of Reps, and you've got your anime caucus, and you're sitting down with Neil Druckmann, and he's like, all right, Lucas, let's get down to brass tacks. Like, what's it going to take for you to back Last of Us 3 for Game of the Year? And you're just like, well, we just need some concessions. The voters in my district, they're simple folk. We just need to make those respect.
You make those eyes bigger and those backgrounds less exciting, then you get the anime vote.
I just need a category, Neil. That's all I need. I'm a simple man. I have simple interests. You and me, we can scratch each other's back. Don't you worry.
I may be a simple hometown anime fan, but
yeah.
Honestly, Neil, hey, if you just update your politics around Israel, that'll get you my vote. That'll get you my support.
That's not how you run a caucus, Lucas. You need to be a cutthroat, slick politician who seems friendly on the outside, but will literally slit your throat if there's a sign of danger.
Neil, I will anime teleport behind you.
Yeah.
And just go to town.
But yeah, that doesn't really represent the anime fandom very well to just like be a smooth operator who is willing to like talk around things, what they really want. And
I don't. Yeah. I got into it a little bit on Blue Sky. I had a moment of solidarity with other people in the anime community, just how, man, impossible it is to explain like situations to, if you're not steeped in the community, like you have no way of knowing that, like, hey, if someone expresses just like any kind of opinion on modern slang in anime localizations, you should not engage with them. They are incapable of talking about anything in good faith. And like, if you're not a part of the community, if you're not like steeped in this shit, you have no, I'm a crazy person for saying that. Like, you think that's, a normal person would think that's a wild overreaction. But then someone did chime in below that comment being like, well, I mean, modern slang does have no place in anime localization. And it was, what are we doing, gang?
You're like, you are proving my point. Literally to a T.
Yeah.
So the idea is like, if there's a slang word in Japanese, rather than try to like translate it to the equivalent of like English slang, they should just leave it in Japanese? Or what's that person's thought?
Or do like a direct like translation, even if there's something lost there and it doesn't mean the same thing?
I don't know what they actually want. I don't know what they would. I think they just don't like seeing themselves in this media. I don't think they want like these gamer anime girls they're fetishizing to talk like, I don't know, Twitch streamers or something. They want like a purity there. They want this to remain like an ethereal,
a complete fantasy.
Yeah.
Some men aren't after rational things like money. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
And
a slice of a tangerine.
That's a great video.
And apparently to some people, like, a character who looks like they would say the word cringe would refer to something as cringe using that term in an anime dub, in an anime subtitle. That is the world burning. And if that's your priority, Jesus, get help.
Well, it reminds me of the ProZD video where it's like official trend, like official dub versus like fan translation, and it's just like, hey, you're my friend. Like, it's like, don't worry about it. Like, we'll get over it. And then it's like fan translations like, fuck you. You are my ore. And it's like a translation note, like ore as a word that's not really, it doesn't even have a reason in English. So we're just leaving it in the way that it like just
there is, yeah. It's a weird, like, affectionate version of Orientalism that's not good at all.
Yeah, all Orientalism is.
Yeah.
I feel like almost as a rule, Orientalism is affectionate in the worst possible ways, right? Like, that's the whole thing with Orientalism is that it's like, it's so great.
This is cool and special because.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Like it's the noble savages. Like there's all sorts of that white people do where it's just like, it's better because it's different. And like, that's awful that you're doing that. Like it's just weird.
I've had some professional experiences of like, well, yeah, you're like meetings, like team wide meetings of like, all right, gang, we're going to try to implement this Eastern business philosophy into our day-to-day work practices and optimize our strategies around this philosophy. And it's like, don't.
When you get fired, we're just going to put you in a room alone until you go crazy and quit. That way we don't actually have to pay you severance.
I don't know. Taking it to like a racial element of like, here's how we can do business better is such a.
We're getting fucked by the Chinese. We need to be like them.
Gives me the
That's
ick.
A thing I've seen a lot.
The reverse China syndrome. Oh shit, we need to do things like the Chinese do them, otherwise we're gonna die. Yeah.
Let's see, outside of those wins, announcements at the Game Awards, McConaughey is in a video game. He announced a trailer for a video game where he plays a character. I don't think his character was in the trailer. That was fucking weird. Sega's remaking some of their most famous games. New Dragon Ball game. That's a lot like the OG Budokai Tenkaichi games. I'm excited about that. Nerds are excited about that. What else do we got? Kojima is making not a horror game, but like a weird...
Not quite a movie either.
Yeah. Jordan Peele came out to like... they jerked each other off for a surprising amount of time. It was odd. And I don't know, Andrew, you're the second biggest Kojima fan on this podcast.
Which is, it's not saying much. Like, I like a couple of the games that the guy has made, but like, I wouldn't consider myself a Kojima guy.
You're fine with him just making another game, right? Like, he doesn't. He could just make a game, you know?
Yeah, but this also might just be a game. And he might be kind of like hyping up how different it is. Like, I don't think that Kojima is going to finally bridge the gap between like stationary media and video games. I don't think he's going to figure that out with whatever the fuck OD is.
Nah.
Also, I think it might just be the next Silent Hill game. Some people were doing some digging and they're like, yeah, they just... Like, when they got the copyright for this, they also got the copyright for, like, Silent Hill, whatever. So it might just be fucking Silent Hill.
People liked his last take on a Silent Hill game. Black Myth Wukong is a Journey to the West-inspired Souls-like from a Chinese dev studio that has a history of sexism that's weird and problematic, and I'm not qualified to talk on it more than just stating the facts. Arkane is making a Blade game. Still weird to me how people like anywhere between 10 and 15 years older than us are really into the Marvel character Blade. And I feel like I just totally missed all that jazz. No Man's Sky game is making another procedurally generated infinite game, which seems ill-advisable, but you do you, fam. There's Final Fantasy 16 DLC that I am not going to play. Monster Hunter Wilds is the, seems like the most immediate sequel to Monster Hunter World. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting that IP is now being split between, yeah, this is the one for mainstream audiences, and this is the one for anime fans that have always been our bread and butter. Interesting approach, but seems to be working for them.
The devs accidentally made a game that appealed to mainstream audiences, and now they're like, fuck, what do we do?
All right.
Split the game up.
This one's for the normies and also the hardcores, and this one's just for the hardcores.
One for them and one for me.
I don't know. There was a surprisingly lackluster amount of weird shit this year, which is what made these awards more boring than what they usually are. In spite of a massive number of layoffs last year, the presenter called this the platinum age of gaming.
Is that better than golden?
I want to say yes.
Is that the idea?
Wow. I guess there's going to be a crossover between Dave the Diver and Dredge. Andrew, do you have any excitement for this?
I've never played Dave the Diver. I thought it looked fun. I mean, usually when they say there's crossovers like that, that just means that there's some sort of skin coming to the game in DLC. Like, I could drive around Dave the Diver's boat if he has one. I don't know if he has one.
Like, no, Dave the Diver is the boat.
Yeah, I could drive around Dave.
Christopher Judge, winner of last year's best performer and voice of Kratos in the God of War games, made a joke about the latest Call of Duty campaign sucking. And Call of Duty developers responded very poorly to that. I don't know. And also, they just used a headshot of Idris Elba during the Best Performance noms cut to the audience, because there was no way he was showing up to this.
What did Christopher Judge do to himself?
What?
Have you seen a picture of Christopher Judge? Well, I guess you probably saw him present. Oh, wow. A lot of plastic surgery. What the hell, man?
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Jesus. For like a voice. Like, I see pictures of him where he looks normal.
And it was, I mean, like, he's a voice actor. He doesn't have to look good.
But then why do it, man? He looks great.
That's for him. That's just for him.
He's got like body dysmorphia or something. Like,
probably.
If you see pictures of him from like 2012, he's just a regular looking guy. And then, wow. That is, anyway. Not to completely derail.
No, fair.
That is insane.
Didn't get a close up of him at the Game Awards, but I guess that's what he looks like.
Yeah, he looks pretty fucking rough.
Gonzo the Muppet was mic'd up longer than most of the winners.
Yeah, of course. It's Gonzo. Gonzo. You gotta give him his just desserts.
Someone walked out in a suit of power armor to promote the Fallout show.
Nice. It's made by Christopher Nolan's brother.
The phrase, "We're celebrating mobile gaming with a Las Vegas sphere," was a sentence that somebody said.
Interesting. Like, they put mobile games on the sphere. Is that the idea?
I think so, yeah. Also, there was a 5-second vaping ad that felt really weird and out of place. Just like, hey, don't vape. Anyway, back to the Game Awards. This was weird. This was bad. This was down to the Game Awards. It's what it is. It's an exercise in futility that I do every year, because I guess being mad is an emotion. I'm reminded I'm not dead when I feel emotions.
Anger is definitely an emotion.
Yeah.
It's one of the big ones.
It's also
one of the Mount Rushmore of emotions, possibly.
It's one of the main Inside Out emotions. They're retconning that. Have you guys seen the trailer for Inside Out 2?
Yeah, they're adding a new one, right?
Oh, not just one. They're adding multiple new emotions. And the idea is like, puberty. We're all
had the same emotions.
Yeah.
Yes. Andrew,
her parents had the exact same emotions.
Yep.
They didn't have more.
Yep. Nope.
Are they going to go away when puberty's done? Are they going to kill those emotions?
That was you nailed my exact first thought. I was like, they go in the head of adults, not just even her parents, multiple adults throughout the movie.
And it's
they
always the same.
The same ones. So to add new ones is a full-blown retcon, and I will accept nothing less. That is a retcon. I guess we will see. Maybe they murder all of the teenage emotions.
Is one of them anxiety? I think I remember hearing about that. Yeah, so like,
wait,
maybe.
How is anxiety different than fear?
I mean, yeah, like all emotions are kind of.
Yeah. It's complex shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
what? Can we get.
Because at the end of the first movie, they like learn how to like merge emotions together. Like, happiness and sadness make a mixed emotion. And that was like, or a mixed memory, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And like, they, and so like, the idea is that that group of emotions puts their shit together as life goes on to make more complex thoughts. So why the fuck do they need to introduce new ones? Also, Amy Poehler's not in it, right?
I think
I heard that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is she not?
That they replaced her?
I did not know that.
That sucks.
That's not ideal.
No.
No, she is.
Oh, she
what?
She did not sound great in that trailer then.
Ooh.
I like, Jay told me that she heard that she got replaced.
I'd heard that too.
Starring Amy Poehler. I don't know. Film stars the voices of Amy Poehler, Phyllis Smith, Lewis Black reprising their roles, with Tony Hale, Lisa LaPira, and Maya Hawke joining the cast. Wait, that's one. Yeah, there is one then that isn't in it anymore.
Wait, did they not get David Schwimmer back as Fear?
Was it David Schwimmer? Wasn't it, what's his name? Barry?
Bill Hader?
Bill Hader?
Wasn't it Bill Hader? Wasn't he Fear.
Oh, it was Bill Hader. Okay.
Yeah. So they didn't get Bill Hader back.
Bill Hader's the one that's not there.
They replaced it with Tony Hale. Lisa Lapira is Disgust. So I don't know who Disgust was.
Mindy back either.
Yeah, it was Mindy Kaling. Yeah. So Mindy Kaling and Bill Hader aren't back, but
okay.
Amy Poehler is. But anyway, no, I saw that and I was like, this is bullshit.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Game Awards are especially weird because E3 is officially dead for the third time.
Yeah, I thought it. I feel like we've reported on this now.
Yeah.
A lot.
It just keeps dying, you know?
Does it ever get revived, or is it just like more stuff coming out about how dead it is? Like,
I think it's like more stuff about, as the name implies, E3 has three hearts, and you got to kill it three times for it to be dead. Okay. Dead.
Right.
Yeah. If you, it has three separate life bars and mutation forms. So you get it down, you get that life bar all the way down the first time. It then inexplicably gets a full life bar and is now harder to fight. Mm. It's a three-stage boss.
Which is what you do, Andrew. You do fight E3 on a regular basis. You can't stand E3.
Maybe not me. You know, speedrunners, they can do it. Oh,
yeah. I would never.
I would never.
Yeah, I think
it's not worth my time.
The first E3 is dead came last year when they were like, ah, even with our new organizer, we can't make it happen this year because COVID. But realistically, because it was a money pit. Yeah. So that's why it didn't happen last year. Then it was killed again when it was confirmed that the ESA wouldn't be renting out the LA Convention Center this year. And then they finally issued a statement at the end of 2023 saying, yeah, big dead.
Stop it. It's already dead.
Yeah. All right. Well, out of an era. I said it before. I'll say it again. Video games aren't cool anymore. Video games are just video games.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's just media.
Yeah. Speaking of media, Twitch briefly allowed artistic depictions of nudity on the platform.
This is a while ago.
Streamers immediately tried to push the envelope on that, and they rolled back the policy within like 48 hours. Ryan is literally eating candy as we talk about this news. Just unbothered, just vindicated.
I just feel like this is one of the first discussions we ever had in the podcast where we pretty strongly disagreed with each other. And that was the whole basis of my argument, was like, they need to set strict guidelines. Like,
right.
I'm not slut-shaming people that are in hot tubs with, like, in bikinis and a bunch of cleavage. It's like, they need to set hard guidelines and actually enforce them. Otherwise, what is this platform going to become? And here we are. They finally reaped what they sowed and had to set some hard guidelines and actually enforce them because, yeah, you can't just let things go forever. That's not how it fucking works. It's a platform. Like, if you want it to be pornography, that's okay. It can be a pornography website, but then you can't, like, have all these brand deals and all this Amazon money and all these, like, gaming shit. Like, no, that's not what you are anymore. So.
Do you guys see any of the latest Meta? Was just,
It was, like, filming from, like,
only having their
up.
Cleavage in frame, so it was like that weird bubble porn that Christians eat up because
that.
It's like, yeah,
they would like wear like super low tube tops, but then like just have the camera frame above that so you couldn't tell if they were wearing anything or not.
Yeah, because it's not a sin if you don't know for sure. Yeah,
right. Wearing physical sensor bars or like censoring themselves and standing perfectly still, like, yeah. Wasn't it just one streamer who was doing body paint stuff, and that's what allowed, like, when they first were like, we're allowing some instances of nudity, because there's like one streamer who would do body paint clothes, and they were like, oh, that's okay.
I don't know if it's just one streamer, but like every time at my old job,
that was
every
what
time
caused the policy to change, was like because there was kind of a controversy with that specific example. It was like, well, it was just a case of like finding where the line is drawn,
right?
And them saying like, okay, I guess that counts, and then everybody kind of just ran away with it.
Speaking from my own work experience, I get it. I get why any company does not want to have hard and fast rules about this stuff, because then they actually have to be held accountable and enforce it and be the bad guy in more situations definitively. But also, when you get to be this large and are even counting on community policing, you need these rules to be as clear and concise as possible, because that's the only way this works. That's the only way there's any kind of consensus on what it's the only way you actually have a brand identity, is by outlining some of this shit.
Right. Look, I ain't no prude, but I did also see a TikTok video of a woman like dressed only in body paint going to the gym and like doing her workout, and a guy being like, hey, there's kids here, like, you gotta wear some clothes, and her being like, you're oppressing me. And it's just like, you're just being like, she's filming the whole thing. It's like,
she's doing that to get a rise out of people.
Yeah, like, it's insane. You can see everything. I'm sorry. Like, this body paint, sure, but like, everything's there still. Human anatomy doesn't change just because you put paint on it. Like,
also, at the gym, not sanitary in the slightest.
No, gross.
That's a huge fucking hazard. Like,
I got an article in the works right now. Will hopefully be coming out this month. I talked to people who are both active in the kink community and self-identify as sex workers, talking about the level of acceptance for public stuff, public play like that. And it just, consent involves the people around you,
exactly,
too. And that, like, there's no, if it's an adults only gym where people are aware that, like, hey, we have a very loose dress code, people are going to be wearing whatever they want here, you coming here means you should be prepared on some level for that. Like,
most
that is totally different from...
Even let, like, guys take their shirts off, because they're like, no, fucking don't do that. Like, you gotta have a shirt on. Like, there are hard rules of what you have, like, you know, minimums to have at the gym, and you cannot violate that shit. Like, it's when you're out in public, people don't have the opportunity to agree to be a part of whatever the fuck you're doing.
Right.
If your kink is, you know, involving doing shit in public and being either embarrassed about it or viewed while doing it, like, that's okay that that's what you want. But, like, other people have to agree to be a part of that. And you're not letting people agree to it. You're just saying, I get to do this because I want to.
Exhibitionism is not okay without any form of consent. That's literal sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And worse.
Mm-hmm.
So when guys would do it on the street with the fucking, what's it called, trench coat, flashing people, like, that's exhibitionism.
Exactly.
Like, it's the exact same thing. And those guys would get fucking arrested, rightfully so. Like, yeah.
Also, my only other comment on that body paint streamer, I don't know if it's just one or if there is one that is far and away more popular than the other ones. Back when I had to go on Twitch at my old job, man, her stream would always pop up in the recommended, because I imagine it popped up in a lot of people's recommended. And I am as progressive about that stuff as anyone. And even I'm kind of like, wow, this sucks that this is coming up on my work laptop while I'm in a professional environment, and there is not a lot I can do about it at first blush.
Yep. Nah. No, Twitch is rough, man. You open up Twitch and that's everything on their front page. And it's like, this is not, I don't know, how do you grow a community on this type of platform? Like, that's not what this is if you're into the mainstream stuff, quote unquote.
I've seen a couple of people that have switched over to the YouTube streaming services, at least to like test it out for a while and see how they do.
I've been going for a long time, YouTube streaming. Like,
I mean, like, recently, like, I've seen more people move over there.
A lot of people just stream simultaneously on like all the major platforms.
Oh yeah, I forgot that's a thing. Yeah. That you can just have one stream hosted and put it on everything.
You can put it on TikTok, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook Gaming. Like, you can just air everywhere.
Huh. That formatting has to be weird. Like, getting on a wide street to the front. No, whatever. Catching up on weird news, the kid who hacked Rockstar and released a bunch of the GTA 6 info was sentenced to life in a prison hospital. Supposedly, his autism gives him a compulsion to hack into secure systems, and this makes him a risk to the public. What do you guys think about this? Because
you can't fucking sentence a kid to life for that shit. Are you fucking kidding me? That's awful.
He didn't get sentenced to life. Like they talked about this. Well, that was for some reason, like the headline was like life in prison, but everyone was like, no, that's not what that means. He's not literally going to be in prison for the rest of his life. I think it was, they said most likely it'll be like 5 years or something with a lot of mental health treatment and everything like
but
that.
But again,
like,
in prison or no. Like, okay, at a psychiatric facility.
Right?
Okay.
Right. A prison hospital.
Well, I don't think it's a prison hospital. No, it's like a mental health facility. Yeah, like it's
those are not, still not fun.
No, of course not. But that's the argument that his lawyers made. So like he would be on the hook for decades of imprisonment. So his lawyers were like, let's do this one instead.
It is it is weird that this is a... I don't know. This is the first time I can think of in like a public court case that somebody has deployed the autism defense. And yeah, I don't know how I feel about it.
The problem is that he hacked like real shit.
Right.
And then was out on bail awaiting trial for the real shit and hacked gaming meme shit.
What was the real shit that he hacked? I don't know,
a telecom provider. Right. And, like,
oh my God.
Multiple, yeah, like e-commerce stuff. Like he was real life hacking.
So he didn't get sentenced to this for hacking Rockstar.
I think it was for the Rockstar thing, but it was like, yeah, as a combination of everything going on, it was like, you gotta. I'm not saying that he has a compulsion, but like, bro, you're out on bail.
Right.
For serious shit, and you still go back to hacking. Like, yeah, you got something going on.
Hey, if this is a Better Call Saul style lawyer, maybe he was like, yo, dude, lean into it. Actually, that might be better for us here. Right. And like, to be not to totally paint this person as maybe they are. Maybe that like autism diagnosis is like totally genuine and like they do need a behavioral help. No judgment there, but like they did try to like sell this stuff. They tried to sell this information. They tried to blackmail both Rockstar and the telecommunications company. Like, hey, we will release this info and like private employee information unless you pay us money not to do that. So clearly this person is a problem, but yeah, I don't know. Just the autism defense gets me, and I'm not sure what to make of it as someone flirting with being on the spectrum. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, how much my shit I want out there. Affluenza was a defense that like successfully got someone off the hook for killing multiple people. You know, think autism should be. Right. You know, at least discussed in the courtroom. Yeah.
I mean, basically, it really doesn't seem like he has a true understanding of actions having cause and effect type shit. Like,
right.
In his sentencing examination, where he underwent like an examination, he told the interviewer that he was going to go back and commit more cyber crimes when he got out. Like, he does not understand that, like, hey, this is serious. This has consequences. Like, to him, it is kind of not, it's disconnected from reality a little bit. So, yeah, no, it's not completely insane when you look at it like that. And yeah, it's not life imprisonment. Right. It's like an indefinite order that'll like, based on previous iterations, will be X amount of years and blah, 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 blah. So.
MatPat is retiring from the Game Theorists YouTube channel. End of an era.
It's a lot of YouTube retirements. Tom Scott retired too.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who else? There was one more. I don't know, man. That's crazy. What a weird thing in YouTube. Corporations keep buying YouTube channels because they think they're like TV. They think they're like right. cable channels. They're
like, we have these viewers. I get yeah. 5 million viewers if I buy this channel.
It's, like, it's so personal. Like, if you don't have the original personality, it's gonna fall apart. Like, that's not how it works. You can't just keep running the channel and expect everything to stay the
buy
same.
Buy Markiplier's YouTube channel and then run a continuous 24-hour stream of vacuum ads.
Nice.
And my vacuum sales are going to go through the roof because 8 million people are watching it.
Yeah. And all you need is 0.1% of those 8 million. back to China syndrome.
It is. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because YouTubers still like to style themselves as a young and disruptive, even though this has been a pretty established yeah. industry for, I don't know, feeling like 15 years now.
Yeah, like but Tom yeah. Scott is like, he's got gray hair. He's like in his 40s.
These people, all YouTubers are going to want to retire someday. Like, it, pass it on. And then, like, it's good now. Yeah, still sell off whatever branding, whatever channel they can to other people or move to a behind-the-scenes role and let other talent take over. But, I don't know, yeah, is this, I don't know, are we seeing the upper limit of, like, YouTube as a model that it puts such an emphasis on individual brand, like individual personality, but once those people get old or move on or just aren't in a position to be like, hey, I'm like 45. I don't know if I should be the face of a YouTube gaming channel that mostly appeals to teenagers anymore. Like, does this just go away then? I mean, obviously we don't know what Game Theorists is going to do in the future, but I don't know. This is weird and an upper limit that I think a lot of other media doesn't have to contend with.
The reason that I had such a strong reaction is I went onto Funhouse's YouTube channel because that's what that reminded me of. The idea yeah. of just like, you replace all the personalities. And I just wanted to see what kind of viewership they're getting nowadays. And their channel trailer is just a fucking very loud guitar riff that's like auto playing when you open their channel. And I was a little taken aback, but do they do a lot of Star Wars videos now? Like, why?
So probably they're one of their best performing series right now, which is, you know, still not doing well, is Star Boys, which is Jacob and Patrick, who are huge Star Wars nerds, playing random Star Wars like shitty video games, and then mm-hmm. having a quote-unquote guest from the Star Wars series, which is just someone in the office wearing a really shitty costume and like doing an impression and going off the rails. And like, I will say is those videos are probably the best stuff that Funhouse has put out in a while, but it's just not the same that it used to be.
I'm not seeing a video they put out in the last month breaking 100k views.
No.
The last one that broke 100,000 was when Bruce Green came yep. back
for an episode. And, yeah.
Like I said, yeah, it's the original personalities are what make the YouTube channel a thing. Like, I'm surprised they're still profitable. Like, I'm surprised they're still.
I don't know that they are. Like, they joke frequently about how they know that the end is near, that Funhouse is not going to be around for that long. They're trying really, really hard just to kind of prevent, like, elongate the inevitable. Elongate is not the right word, Jesus. Prolong the inevitable. But like, what? That channel trailer that you're talking about is like, they have, you know, Rooster Teeth first, obviously, and then like the YouTube members Funhouse thing where there are videos that you can only watch if you're a Funhouse first member and like paying YouTube to watch them. So I don't know. I don't know if those videos are good because I'm not paying to watch it.
Right. Like, I know a lot of people talking, like Rooster Teeth, I know, is like, they've had a complete change of leadership at the top, right? Like, it's not the people that started Rooster Teeth anymore.
No.
And yeah, Funhouse is still a subsidiary of Rooster Teeth. And Rooster Teeth's owned by Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah. Who's they've gotten bought by more and more like shell corporations that have then like sold it to somebody else who sold it to somebody else who sold it to somebody else. It's crazy.
Right. And so like Warner Brothers Discovery has been closing TV shows and taking them off their platforms for tax purposes. Like, I can't imagine they're good with something that doesn't make any money continuing to exist.
The viewership on the Rooster Teeth videos is also worse than the Funhouse channel, and it seems like they're uploading less frequently on Rooster Teeth.
Well, Rooster Teeth is like the main channel.
It's kind of just the... Rooster Teeth is not the main channel for like content. Rooster Teeth is like the organization.
Right.
They don't really have a big viewership anymore.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, Rooster Teeth used to have like shorts and other content that like actually, or like real life content that would be kind of the main draw. And now it seems like, yeah, it's just random shit, like clips from the podcast and things like that, which, yeah, that's not going to perform the same.
College Humor had to do the same thing, I guess. Like, they are a dropout now, and the vast majority of their content is behind a paywall on their own website. And while I guess that is more sustainable, is it even really? Like, they don't do sketches anymore in a way that bums me out.
They just have, like, their
out.
Game like, shows and podcasts, right?
Right. Like, I enjoy those. Do I want to watch the new Dimension 20? Whatever.
Have they ever done another Fantasy High season one? Like, have they ever done a campaign with like full miniatures, like actual effort? They add like the illustrations. They're like going all in, or is it always Fantasy High season two? Like,
they're back in the studio for season three. I think they're back to form in this one, but
Fantasy High season two, they were in the studio for a good chunk of it, but they didn't have the minute. It was like, what do they call it? Like the fantasy of the mind or whatever. Like, they don't have the miniatures. They don't have the editing. It just felt like a live stream of them playing D&D, which is fun, but that's not what like got me into the original show. Was that it was like a show. You know?
And I mean, that's a problem with internet digital media content more broadly right now. Like, it's, there's no budget for anything anymore. Like, it all has to be done as fast and cheaply as possible.
Yeah, the adpocalypse really fucked shit over.
Nah.
The pivot to video.
Hey,
my favorite fucking thing ever is Robert Evans, the host of Behind the Bastards, who worked for crack.com, every day on Twitter, when he makes a reference of something being killed, he replaces it with like pivot to video. Like, it's just like, oh, you know, all those refugees in Syria, I guess they had to pivot to video. Like, it's just like constant, like, pivot to video means death because people are, yeah, just like Facebook forced all these companies to make a terrible business decision,
yeah,
and then all die because of it.
I am actively job hunting right now, and well, I will gleefully work for anyone more or less right now. Well, not anyone, like a lot of people I will gleefully work for. I really hope I end up at a place that doesn't have an ad revenue based business model, because it is only going to get tougher in that sphere in the months and years ahead.
Do you think that like there's just a broader trend of advertising not being considered like important to major corporations anymore? Or is it just fragmentation? Like, I feel like it's fragmentation is the excuse everyone uses of just like there's so many more places to place ads now. Right. That like nothing is profitable because everything is so
it's
much
all
cheaper.
Split up.
Right. But like, I don't think that fully accounts for how bad it is out there. Like, I just, to me, it seems like strategically, like advertisers are making different decisions and are just, they're not running standard, like, we'll be right back after this commercial break. Hey guys, Crest is great. Brush your teeth, everything. Like, they want, they've pivoted to like marketing efforts of like, no, we're going to make a Crest mascot who pulls pranks on people and then upload that to our TikTok. And then, you know, like shit like that. Like, it feels like advertising isn't the same as it once was.
When you brought up the pivot to video, the first thought that I thought of was what came after pivot to video, which was, how do we make this go viral? Like, viral marketing dug its way into the brain of every single like business executive in the country for a long time, and it's still there. Like, I see this shit at my work. Jade sees it at hers. I don't know if you guys have heard this shit or not, but like anytime a company, doesn't matter how small and shitty and worthless they are, doesn't matter who their audience is, how old or young they are, they think that the secret to making their company profitable is to make a fucking TikTok video of like people in the office doing wacky shit. And that's going to make them money. The how do we make this go viral is a thing that, like, there were so many TED Talks and bullshit self-help business, like, influencers that are just like, the way to do business now is to get on a phone and put your shit on a phone. Make it viewable on your phone. Distill your company and your people down into a 5-second video on a phone. That's viral marketing, baby. And so then fucking old ass people come up to us all the time and go, hey, good work on the whatever account. How do we make that go viral? And I want to fucking shoot people. It is. Please cut that.
No, I mean, I know that.
Right.
Phenomenon a little bit. I definitely don't, in my company, we don't really try to go viral, quote unquote, but like I have noticed, because a lot of we live in Los Angeles, like there's a lot of people who are using social media platforms for themselves personally and have like small-ish followings, you know, like it's like, oh, I got like 1,000 followers, and when I tweet something, I get like 20 likes sometimes. Like I kind of know, I've got a good gauge on what, you know, doing well on a social media platform is. And then they see, yeah, like a show or something like that getting like 1,000 likes on YouTube, and they're like, it's going viral, this shit's blowing up. And like they don't, I don't think they have the reference frame of what truly viral is. And so they think like this thing's blowing up on TikTok because like it got 50,000 views on TikTok. And it's like 50,000 views is nothing. Like you could make a nothing video and it could get 1,000,000 views. Like TikTok is, you're churning shit out. Like,
yep.
And so they confuse viral. I mean, like, yeah, like you're absolutely right. Like any amount of viewership is quote unquote viral to them, but they confuse getting a lot of likes or engagement on a post with going viral. And it's like a lot of people liking your tweet is not going to make you money. It's not going to people use your product or buy into your business. Like going viral is shit that happens very infrequently that involves conversations happening around that thing for a long period of time. You can't go viral with a post. It's not possible.
It's the same thing as like email newsletters or email campaigns or whatever. The action rate on that, the ratio of people opening that email, reading through all of it, and then making a purchase, engaging with a product, doing whatever that actually makes a company money, it's a fraction of a percent almost always. And yeah, sure, you should probably do that if you have any kind of audience or market research that suggests your audience, your user base would be particularly susceptible to that. But it's not, I don't, there's no golden bullet for any of this stuff. Like it's, people in decision-making positions just see, well, we have the potential to make some amount of money for a very low cost of investment by making a social media post, by making a TikTok. So let's just do that. Let's just undercut whatever expenses we have in advertising, in audience development as possible, and whatever, maybe we'll go viral and that'll be fine. It's just not, I want to believe that people in leadership roles in companies are smarter than this, that there are like actual, no, I genuinely, because like I want to think that it's just chuds who think that like actual business is like, well, I just got to make deals that have the biggest numbers coming to my company. And like, I don't know, some of this does feel like that in this modern business landscape, in the modern digital media landscape, of just Yeah, we got to get the biggest numbers possible while spending the littlest numbers possible. And that's infuriating.
It's not chuds. Like, it's not a meritocracy. It's not a weird reverse meritocracy. Like,
yeah,
people
it's
at the
not
top
that
of these
a...
companies are the same as the people that you work with on your level. Like, there are people that are very competent, very level-headed, making correct decisions. And there are people that are not and are not making the correct decisions and are making mistakes that are costing the company lots of money. Like, there's no... Maybe you could argue there's a little bit of like a weight, like it's harder to rise through the ranks when you're a moron, but like
the big issue there is that they think that's not how it works. The people at that top level, you know, I'm not saying that they are, that there's a higher concentration of idiots at the highest possible level, but even though there is not like a super high concentration of smart people there, they think that there is. That's the biggest folly in my mind. Like, that's what actually kind of makes those people dumb, is that they think that they're all way smarter than they actually are. And this how smart they actually are might not be dumb, but it's not nearly as smart as they think.
Yeah, it's what makes functionally a Donald Trump presidency worse than a George W. Bush, a Nikki Haley presidency, is because Donald Trump isn't even going to listen to sane people in the room. Like, even if he is, you know, somewhat competent in one field, that's irrelevant because there's people more competent that he's not going to listen to at all. Whereas George W. Bush is at least like, I'm a fucking moron. Or at least I hope. I mean, he has examples of him being like, I'm deferring to experts in this instance. Like, it's not all the time. Not saying George W. Bush was good, just saying like there's examples of him actually deferring to people. And yeah, there a lot of people at the top don't want to defer to people. They want to be like, no, I am the expert. There's a reason I am where I am, and it's because I'm so much better than everyone and I can make the right decision on everything. And yeah, no, if you put someone with a more level head in that position who didn't have that ego attached, by and large, you would get a more positive outcome. But no, it's the myth of meritocracy is arguably capitalism's biggest folly. Is just the idea that like the wheat is separated from the chaff, the good rises to the top, everything else fails. Like that's toxic. It destroys people's brains. It destroys our entire society. Like, it's just not how it works. People are people. People have strengths, people have weaknesses, some more strengths, some more weaknesses. Like, it's just, we're all doing our best. Some people's best is a lot better than others. And there's no relevance to how successful they are based on that. That's just how it works.
There's always going to be a nephew out there swooping in and taking that hitman job away from me.
Dude, not even necessarily the nephew taking away your hitman job. Like, so many people that... No, they're nice. They're courteous.
And they're
they
like,
say the
hey,
right things when they need to say the right things, and they are completely clueless. Like, they just don't know shit about shit, and they work their way at much farther than they would if it was a true meritocracy, because why wouldn't you promote someone who is nice and courteous and seemingly doing the job that you
or
want them to
familiar
do?
Familiar at the very least, because a lot of hires, especially at that level, are just what you're familiar with, or like people that you know or like. Because, you know, if I was, you know, an executive vice president of something, and somebody said, hey, you know, who do you have to recommend for the, you know, fucking whatever opening, I might say, you know, Lucas DeRuyter is someone I've worked with before. He's a great guy. I like him a lot. He's great to work with. He's hardworking. You know, fucking put him in there.
Best man at my wedding.
Yeah, full vote of confidence. And it might be something you're not remotely qualified for or have any sort of experience in. Like,
Lucas is qualified for everything.
What do you need?
He's the perfect
applicant. And so you might come in there and be like, you know, I've never worked with molecular biology before, but I'm a good problem solver, so let's figure this shit out. And the people that know molecular biology might be like, what the fuck? I don't care that you're a good guy and, you know, work hard and have a good sense of humor. like, and provide for your family or some shit like that. Like, I need somebody that knows how to do this thing and will listen to me.
I'm sorry, are you saying you don't value outside perspectives at this company? You don't value approaching problems?
Yeah, because then they start doing shit like this where they gaslight people that try to tell them what's what.
I'm dangerously close to airing some dirty laundry from some of my employers that I probably should not. So let's
off
transfer
the pod. Let's go.
Let's transfer over to a more fun talking point, I hope, in the breakouts. My parents stayed with me for a few days. So I ended up watching in the background maybe a dozen episodes of Yellowstone with my mom. I don't understand how a show this overtly expensive is so not good.
You know, man.
It's a lot of episodes to watch in the past.
Yeah, a few dozen. Oh, maybe a dozen. Okay. That is still a lot of episodes to watch of a show you don't like.
That week, just focusing on having my parents have a good time while they're visiting me. You know, that's what I set out to do. And watching Yellowstone during the downtime.
Dude, 12
in the background
hours
was a part
of Yellowstone.
This show was like Game of Thrones for people who voted for Ronald Reagan. Like, that's what I think it's going for.
That was probably the business pitch, Lucas. Yeah. Like, that's what got it greenlit.
There's some stuff going on here that does, just some writing, just some character motivations that don't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention, but like, I don't know. There's one character in there who like is a lawyer, and his dad hates him because he's a lawyer and not like a real man working on the ranch. He's not a cowboy. What, I'm a cowboy. You don't have that cowboy in you, son. You're a failure to me. And like, there are flashbacks where he's like an 18-year-old and like, wow, hey, I got into Harvard, which is super weird because I didn't apply to Harvard. And his dad is just like, no, yeah, I need you to go to Harvard and be a lawyer for me. That would be really helpful to the family if you did that. And the kid's just like, but you always said you didn't respect lawyers. Will you be one that I can respect, son? And it's like, what's going on here? What is this character writing? What are these relationships?
I want to fucking hate you so bad, son.
Yeah. It's like, Dad, I'm really good at ranching. All the other ranch hands have always said that they look up to me and that I'd be a great fit to join the team after I, you know, finish high school. And just like, yeah, you give me lawyer vibes. I think it's time to go to law school instead. I don't know. It's like the reverse. They did that in Community, right? With the reverse Goodwill Hunting, like,
right.
you should do your book learning. Don't be an air conditioner repairman. Like,
and then like maybe this is a sexist thing that I'm about to say, but the writing around some of the women in the show is also weird, where the daughter, the like main ranch guy's daughter, is terrible, which I guess is kind of empowering because, like, yeah, women can be bad in media. We need to normalize that. Women can be awful.
It's so empowering. Women
but
can be shitty.
But it's like,
hey, the idea of the Mary Sue comes from like similar to what we were talking about with the noble savages, with the like Orientalism, like the idea that like there's a female character who is perfect, just objectively has never done anything wrong, is always correct whenever she has a hunch or an idea. Like, that is also toxic. Like, that is also not great, like, as a trope. So I don't disagree, but yeah, I don't think in this case.
But then her actions and character relationships are often so inconsequential to broader storylines that it almost feels like, oh man, this script is coming in a couple minutes short. Yeah, can we just throw in a scene where she's tearing someone a new one? Hey, our audience likes that when she's awful. Can we just squeak that in there somewhere?
I really like the new Yellowstone drafts that you've gotten me. I've noticed it doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
that is fair. Like, the women in the
can you put some women in here as an afterthought?
Actually,
I mean, Taylor. Oh, sorry, go.
No, I'm actually not sure if two women had a conversation in any of the episodes I saw, regardless if they're about a man or not, but go on.
Taylor Sheridan was a failed actor. Like, that's his thing. He played some bit roles. He had, you know, he's working, and he will self-admittedly say he gave up on acting because he didn't feel like there was space for him in Hollywood, and just started writing for himself, and then got a show picked up, and then it was so unbelievably successful that he just kind of fell into, like, now I'm this big hotshot in Hollywood, and I don't know, I never thought I was like God's gift to Earth in terms of writing. Like, I'm just a guy. I like Westerns.
I'm not denying the popularity of this show at all. Like, this is
right
one of the biggest shows out today. Like,
it is the biggest show.
Yeah.
No, I'm simply adding context of, like, yeah, the writing is uneven and weird. I don't think Taylor Sheridan would say it's like elite level, unstoppable writing that every American must consider. I think he'd be like, it's a cowboy story where there's cowboys doing cowboy things and Kevin Costner's in it. And it's
and
fun.
Now he's not.
Well, they're ending it because of it. Yeah.
My folks are even, like, admittedly open about that. There's like, well, this isn't good, but, like, it's January and new stuff isn't out yet because the strikes are still happening, or, like, we're still catching up from the strike. So, yeah, this will get us through the coldest, darkest months of the year in Wisconsin. It's fine.
They didn't want to rewatch The Sopranos with you?
No. Oh, man, that season one ending, let me tell you.
It's a good show.
That season two opening.
You're a little behind the curve. But
yeah.
Hey, guys, have you ever heard this little indie HBO show?
Also, I can pass no judgment on people who are watching Yellowstone because in my winter months boredom, I checked out the first two episodes of the Ted TV show.
Oh, wow.
I have a Peacock subscription anyway.
Wow. My God.
As somebody who was like 14 when that movie came out, I laugh at this more than I care to admit. And also, the animation on Ted is surprisingly good. So, get up, fair, whatever.
It's
junk
a solved
food, but
problem.
It's junk food for me. Yeah.
Like you said, the movie came out 13 years ago. All those assets are there. Like,
yep.
It's probably still pretty cheap to animate Ted as a character. They kind of got it down.
And the show is very, like, all the budget went to animating Ted. Like, this is very neutral backgrounds, like not doing anything crazy otherwise, like, and that's fine. Yeah,
just a sitcom with a live teddy bear.
Yes, and it's
does Seth it feel Seth MacFarlane-y, or
it
is
feels
it
Seth MacFarlane-y? Yeah, like, okay. It actually, one of the interesting things is that I think, like, his pool of voice actors that appear on both Family Guy and American Dad, they're playing live action roles in this, and it's weird hearing those voices. But seeing them come out of real people.
Real, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, you know, on some level, he gave the people he's worked with for two decades now, like, another revenue stream. So good on him for that, I guess.
Is he working, though? He didn't create the show, right? He's just like an EP.
I don't know if he, yeah, I'm not sure what his credit is on it.
Ted official trailer.
Ted show. Head TV series, created by Seth MacFarlane. Oh, no, it's directed by Seth MacFarlane.
Wow.
Hmm. So he is more involved in this now than, like, Family Guy or American Dad.
There you go. Narrated by Ian McKellen, huh? You got Gandalf as the narrator.
Oh, man, that is... Well, because he did it in the first movie, at least. And, like, it is... That opening is, like, 30 seconds of narration. Did that... Mm-hmm. That was giving his buddy Ian McKellen a paycheck. Yeah.
There you go.
All right. What are you guys checking out? What have you guys been checking out?
We've been watching White Lotus. We're finally on that train. It's pretty good. It's not my favorite show. It's not for me, which is why I didn't originally really watch it. I just felt like it wasn't my cup of tea necessarily, but it is watchable, it is bingeable. We're about to finish. It's only 13 hours or so. So you can knock it out pretty quickly in about a week or so. But yeah, it's not terrible.
Hmm.
Then otherwise, yeah, knocking out of the park with FIFA. My women's team is growing, adding more and more women by the second. The team of the year is about to come out in a couple weeks, and we're going to have a full 12 players for men and women. So the market's going to get fucked, and it's going to be amazing, and everything's going to fall apart, and all the incels are going to be really mad that there's a lot of really good women cards, and it's going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to it. I'm having a great year in terms of this garbage game that is made by a garbage company. And Battlefield 1. Me and Andrew have been playing some Battlefield 1 and being ship boys. And
how many people are still playing that?
Enough.
Huh? I think there's like 10 to 15 servers that are full, you know, with 128 players on each one. So,
yeah, it seems like there's about the same amount of people as they were last time we were playing it 3-4 years ago or whatever. It's a blast. It's a good game. It's really well made. There's a lot of memeable moments. We had a game today where we were on A and B of this one objective.
And there was like a mountain in between.
Yeah, there's a big rock between A and B. And we took A, and then the other team took B. So then we ran over to B, and they were gone. And we started taking B, and we noticed that they were taking A. And then we ran back over. And we realized that we were just staying circling on opposite sides of the mountain. Yeah, not even circling each other, just always we were on the right side of the mountain. They were on the left side. And at some point, there was like a bit of a tacit agreement because we literally did it about 4 or 5 times in a row.
It was 15 minutes.
Like, that we would stay on each other's and we wouldn't cross paths. Eventually, it started getting a little messy because I think me and Andrew in particular were like... Let's stop this.
Let's go get these guys.
Let's get off this wild ride. And then it got a little messy. But even then, it still continued for a good 5 minutes of just trading A and B. And we racked up the points. It was an XP glitch. Like, we could just constantly take an objective with no opposition back and forth.
It was just the gag of chasing a guy around a table. But in Battlefield,
but we weren't going in circles. We were like, just it was like the no touchy zone. Like, we were always on the right.
There were like once or twice where we said, "Let's go the other way," and we didn't run into them. So like, they must have chosen that opportunity to go the other way.
It's just game theory. We both at the exact moment decided to fuck the other people, and that actually made it unopposed. Yeah, no, it was insane. I think our squad leader had like 17 captures that game in the course of like 30 minutes, just constantly going back and forth. It was fun.
Hmm.
And then we were boat boys. We were pirates.
Yeah.
Which is fun. We just stayed on a boat basically the entire length of the match, which was great.
Andrew, what have you been checking out?
Not a whole lot. Jade and I finally watched the first episode of season 3 of Only Murders in the Building.
Ooh.
Which was good. Looking forward. Did not expect fucking Meryl Streep to randomly be an important part of the show. That's a big name. And then we watched The Naked Gun from 1988. It's a movie I've wanted to check out for a long time. It is funny. It is really fucking stupid, but it is funny. It's a lot like Airplane. And then, yeah, Battlefield.
Meh. Very cool. The last thing I want to shout out is a little indie game on Steam called Lunacid, I think it's pronounced. I've spent 2 hours with it. I'm not qualified to speak on it at length yet. I will in the future. But, if you, like me, have an affinity for PlayStation 1-style graphics... And also, I don't know, almost cliche, but like affectionate cliche fantasy, dark fantasy storytelling conventions. Check this game out. I'm having a blast in this dungeon crawler. And it's good. Also inspired by the anime. Oh man, we gotta have a Lucas's anime corner sometime soon. Been forgetting about that. inspired by the anime Delicious in Dungeon. I read all of the manga Delicious in Dungeon, and it's only 94 chapters. Other people should do that. Starts as a very fun, cute story about wellness and mental health, and then transforms into a really great exercise in world building and the human condition. And also has a really fun conclusion that I certainly didn't see coming, and like it a whole lot. Yeah. All right. That's it. That's it for the first voluntary viewing podcast of 2024, which will almost certainly be titled It's Not a Sin If You Don't Know For Sure. Thank you for listening. Support us on Patreon. Join the likes of Sucky Badger and Tiffany Cole. Actually, link in the description. Follow us on Twitter at V2_podcast for as long as Twitter's a thing. Send us your questions, voluntaryviewing@gmail.com. Yeah, I don't know. We'll do more of these. Because, I don't know, regardless of if you guys keep listening to it, we're doing it for us. We don't need you. Get out of here. Go home to your family, if you have one. Goodbye.